Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Chris Jackson. Fred's just about to hit me up with a question, and I'm sitting with bated breath.
That's right. And, I know you just ran off and got your water bottle, so hopefully you're ready to answer this one. It's so what came first, statistics, the field of statistics and understanding variability, or reliability, wanting to make something that actually is durable and lasts as long as expected?
It's got to be reliability, you would think. I mean, you would think that when humankind started developing tools, they quickly learned through, I suppose, build, test, fix, what worked and what didn't, what lasted longer, and what was a surefire strategy for disappointment. That'd be my immediate response.
Okay. So there was craftsmen and artisans and people making wagons and wheels, and then they put metal bands on the outer part of the wooden wheels. They made better roads, you know, stuff like that. All long before the courtesans and the French courts started gambling their fortunes away and then hiring statisticians to sort it out.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Or I think they actually were hiring mathematicians at that point, and then they invented statistics.
Yeah, I don't think there was a delineation between the two. I mean, but to be fair, I think the reliability it has been a word that's been around for a long time, but it's only relatively recently, the 20th century, where it got defined the way it did in the field of reliability engineering, where it became a probability. Before then, reliability was just a quality that something or characteristic that something had, and it was largely subjective. Although there's a certain amount of objectivity with customer expectations, or you know, hunter-gatherer expectations, a spear should last as long as this, and but for me, reliability has to have been around before probability and the statistics. And organizations, Fred, which do precious little probability and statistics. They just design reliability in from the start,
right?
I have to stick with that answer, I think.
Okay. But the issue I have is that there are wonderful textbooks and all kinds of resources available that really start with statistics right off the bat. And they're using and some of it is our common definition, or our definition for reliability is that probability over some duration in a known environment, the successful operation of some functions. But it really is embedded in this probability part. And then what I have found is that most engineers that I run across basically remember not so fondly their class in undergrad on probability and statistics, and just tended to shy away from it. Yet I've also found that so many people offer courses that are little more than a stats course with the reliability statistics flavor.
I often say that the typical reliability engineering course has three distinct phases. The very first two are very short. So phase one is a picture of an airplane crashing or a nuclear power plant exploding, or a chart of how much money some company lost because they created something terrible. That's phase one.
Yeah.
Then phase two is a stuffy professor-looking person saying reliability is really, 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 really important. reference phase one. And then phase three is, okay, here's a Fourier transform and integral. It just goes straight into probability and statistics. Yeah.
You got to throw in the bathtub curve there somewhere. That's the obligatory class standard, you know.
Oh man, and you got these. That's right. And there's the painful analogies, visual analogies people like to use with the bathtub curve. Reliability is a ship sinking in the bathtub. Oh, it's just horrific. But yeah, I agree. Those three phases. Phase one insert catastrophe here. Phase two, say reliability is really important. And phase three is open up your mouth because I'm going to belt feed you statistics, standard deviation, means, moments, percentiles, and it's just it's not useful because that's not how humans learn. Firstly, it's just, and that's why people have such a sour taste.
Well, there's that, but it also in textbooks and in courses and at conferences and everything else, it's easy to teach somebody a math class because here's the process and you can get a answer and we can check. Did you get the right answer for this given stack of data or this particular analysis? It is a broad set of tools. There's no doubt about it. I'm not saying that reliability doesn't need probability, is we do, and it has a place. Yet it's not the only thing. And I think we agree on that, but I'm struggling with, well, why is it so prevalent that the probability just dominates the reliability world? Now, there are people like Wayne Nelson. He's a great guy, but he'll tell you, he's a statistician first. He's a mathematician and statistician first, and happened to be solving interesting reliability problems where he worked and then in through his consulting career. But his approach, I mean, one of the first conversations I had with him years and years and years ago is he pulled out a napkin and started writing down the likelihood functions for different distributions. Just not the, you know, and he started deriving the equations right on the table. And I'm like, okay, I have no idea what you're doing. I was impressed. And he says, oh, this is the way you go about doing it. And this is, you know, and I was trying to solve a problem that one of the assumptions you make in a lot of regression stuff for reliability in degradation testing is that the degradation is linear in some fashion. Well, mine wasn't. And he says, oh, here's a way you can solve this. And he started from first principles. It's like a mechanical engineer pulls out, you know, starts from scratch with the Lagrange transform, you know, equation, and he starts sorting it out. And Wayne and others have advanced the reliability statistics significantly. And Meeker and Escobar's book, it's all about the statistics and probability and statistics stuff and how to solve interesting complex problems with it. And it's marvelous. What we don't have is clean, clear, this is designed for reliability. And I've seen a few books with that title over the years, but they struggle with it is that it's an art and they want to make it a process.
That's a good point.
You know, and so it's more difficult to write, design it in and make it stick across industries where hypothesis tests in the polymer industry is the same as in the medical industry. It's a hypothesis test. You're comparing something. That's it.
Well, one of the enduring problems of the statistics and how it's sort of taken over at least aspects of reliability engineering is that there is an industry in teaching it and there's an industry in being perceived to know it. So if you are seen as, even within your own organization, if you are seen as the person who knows probability and statistics inside and out, then you become valuable, at least there's a perception that you are valuable within that organization. And so therefore you defend not only, I mean, I've come across plenty of these people in organizations who are the statistics guy or the statistics girl, and that's their thing. And their value, their perceived value to the comrades goes down if statistics isn't seen as an integral part of whatever it is you do. And I dare say you've had similar experiences to me when I say, hey, let's just stop worrying about statistics first. Let's maybe invest half those resources into essentially a familiar process or something similar where we say, let's design reliability in from the start and then you can test and analyze away. And that was devastating to these people because they ceased to be important for that new push. It's that there's an industry in being knowledgeable. There's an industry, the universities, industry for universities and other places like that to teach statistics. You can We can never stop learning about probability and statistics. It's an ongoing art. It's an ongoing field of study. And mm-hmm. so there's an industry in selling postgraduate degrees, which are 99% probability and statistics.
Yep.
But and then with journals and things like that, the requirement for you to get an article published in a journal is that what you do, or what you publish, or what you talk about needs to be something that hasn't been done before. So you can't republish the same concept explained in a different way. And a lot of the reliability challenges are solved by organizational culture. And realistically, there's new takes on what culture is, but it's more coaching. It's more, we know what a good culture is. It's just how do you get there? And that mm-hmm. doesn't make for good journal fodder. And so the industry of statistics and probability within reliability can be profitable. And that's why it's very prevalent.
Yeah, that explains a lot of it. And you're right. I'm thinking of the University of Maryland coursework. Is a good amount of it is heavy math, isn't it?
Yeah.
Not my class.
I remember.
The problem is, why I bring this up is that it's gotten backwards. It's way too many. And what we find we're doing nowadays, and what I write about more often on Ascendo and other authors are writing about it, and we talk about it, is that when you run a test or you gather some data to do an analysis, it's for some purpose. It's got to connect somewhere in your organization for a meaningful reason.
And it's got to inform a decision.
Right. It's got to inform a decision, and it should actually create an ROI. It shouldn't muddy the decision so you're more likely to make a mistake. It should inform it and be useful for it. And so it makes a difference. And that part is getting lost. I see it with testing and I see it with statistics. And it's as well, I need to collect data. Well, why? I need to run this test so I can collect data. All right. Well, what are you going to do with the data? Oh, I got this fancy software package. I run it through that and I get a chart out of the end of it or a number out of the end of it. All right. Okay. So you get a number. What are you going to do with that? And I usually get this stare. Well, isn't it obvious? I that's what I'm supposed to do. And it's like, well, not really. Mm-hmm. No, let's turn this back around. Is if you're setting up a design of experiments and you got seven different contributing factors and you can create a beautiful array and run a great experiment, get all this data. Was that just idle curiosity that drove you into that investment? Or was it somebody really wanted to optimize this design that had this complex set of interactions, or what is it you were trying to accomplish? If there's not an audience at the end of the day, then, well, it's just a hobby.
Yeah. I'll go one step further, actually, because I think you and I use the term, it's got to answer a question. Data analysis, statistical analysis, probabilistic inference. Yeah, I think for a while there, we were both using, saying it has to answer a question. How are you trying to generate an answer based on the information that you create during statistical inference? And I've actually stopped using that now because I realize there's plenty of questions that get answered, which then have no bearing on what the organization does anyway. So mm-hmm. Okay. That's nice to know that it's going to fail within 3 hours. It's still going to launch. Okay. All right. Right. So it's not just answering a question. It's about informing a decision. And that's where, a lot of organizations I find struggle because when it gets to the point where you say, actually, you might be answering a question with the statistical inference, but is it going to change what you do? And if the answer is no, then don't do it. And then people get panicked because it just turns out that statistical inference was little more than a security blanket. They wanted yep. to feel good about doing something that had reliability in its vague blurb, but realistically, it's going to change nothing.
Well, I think I find it in the statistical thinking in some cases doesn't go deep enough, and in other cases, it goes way too deep. More to your point, is that where it doesn't go deep enough is they say, well, we only have three samples, so we're going to run this test and based our And we need the answer, is it going to last long enough, or is this, you know, whatever we're doing. Well, and then you step back and say, well, what is the source of the biggest problems you're having? Oh, it's manufacturing variability. But we're going to pick three samples we know will survive the test so we can pass it.
Yep.
I'm like, okay, you need to think this through a little bit here, guys. what's really going on here? This variability really does call out for a statistical approach, because that's the language of variability, statistics. And so it really has a connection there for you to get a reasonable result. But to your point, though, if they tested 300 samples and they still aren't going to change anything, well, then it's just as valid as doing three samples and getting meaningless information out of the other end.
Right.
Doesn't matter. The idea of, it's a set of tools, and it's what I come back to all the time, is that the stats textbooks have a here's my word of the day, a plethora of, you like that one? You like plethora?
Big fan of plethora. Love it.
Yeah. Okay.
carpet bomb that everywhere in the rest of this podcast. Yeah,
that's right. So there's all these different tools and techniques, and the downside of a lot of the software packages we have and all of the algorithms we have and all the online calculators we have is that you can find a tool that will give you a number, pretty much any number you want. And the problem is that there's a bit of too much of just open it up. I got 30 minutes. I got to get this done. I'm going to, create this. Here's a procedure that looks like it might work for me. Let me try it. And then all of the underlying assumptions mean that it's just not appropriate at all. You're just getting a random number at this point. Or the procedure is for variables data and you're applying a attribute data set to it and unwittingly, and fundamental stuff of basic understanding of the tools and what's available and what's out there. And I have to admit that it's not just look it up online or read about it once or twice. You got to go play with this stuff and experiment with it and try it and learn step by step. Because some of these tools, and for many people, struggle with the concepts that are in those tools. But it's very easy to get a wrong answer unknowingly. Especially when you just drop the stuff into a software package and you go, oh, that p-value looks good, not even knowing what it means.
Right. And then I think the other thing too with this preponderance of, you know, set certain statistical tools, because that's, we haven't talked about that yet, but we talked about how, you know, there is an industry to be had if you are able to teach statistics or have statistical knowledge and you're perceived to be valuable because of that. Mm-hmm. But that there also is a certain set of statistical tools which come up over and over and over again, and so they become synonymous with reliability engineering, and almost all of them require beautiful test data, time to failure data with, you know, at use conditions, all those things that realistically take a long time to generate. And perhaps negate all sorts of other useful bits of information like accelerated testing or expert judgment. This whole probability and statistics has got, you know, for those, you know, those nerds out there, it's got a very, what we call classical focus, and classical statistics is called frequentist statistics for a reason, because you need so much data, because you're excluding your expert judgment, you're excluding uncertain evidence, you're excluding all this other corporate knowledge which your company almost certainly has buckets full of. From a statistical perspective, you forget all that stuff and then test your thing as if you've never seen it before and I got genuinely no idea how it's going to fail, and then you require so much data to predict what the reliability of your thing is, and then 3 years later after you needed to launch your product to be competitive in the market, you might get an answer within plus or minus 20%. So,
yeah, I agree. It's one of the best compliments I ever received was that a statistician first, a reliability person, described my work as being in engineer's work first. He says, you tend to ask the questions of what's underlying this? What's the phenomena? What do we know and don't know? And then I bring in enough statistical knowledge to deal with the variability of stuff, for example, mm-hmm. in understanding how, well, we got to, you know, if we make this fatter and heavier, it'll dampen this out, and then we don't have to worry about the vibration as much. And let's go measure that. Does it make a difference? But I think the hard part, and it doesn't matter where you come into the package of this thing, is you got to step back and think, one, where does this connect to the business? Is it going to make a difference or not? And I think you made that point very clear. The second part is that, do I understand this technique well enough to apply it well? You know, it's a tool. If you pick up the wrong tool, and although we do know people that will pick up any tool and use it as a hammer,
yep,
it's not efficient. It's not helping you. It's probably harming yep. something. But the idea is that I think the overall summary is that reliability enjoys the use of probability and statistics. It's not reliability engineering. It's a part of it. It's one of the big sets of tools that we have, and it's worth knowing. Yet it's not to the exclusion of connecting it to your business and designing in reliability and influencing teams and decisions and things like that to understanding customers. All of those elements can benefit with an astute application of statistics, but just doing statistics is not sufficient.
Well, it's not sufficient. It's not reliability engineering, because engineering is about engineering reliability into something.
Yep.
So you can measure and analyze as much as you want. You can be the timekeeper at the Olympics, but that doesn't mean you're going to make the person, the athletes whose race time you're measuring. It's not going to make any of them any faster.
No, it's the coaches. Unless you're the Russian judge.
That's right. Shout out to our Russian listeners there.
That's right.
especially in Winter Olympics, that's good times. But yeah. but you can measure athletes as much as you want, but it's the coaches and the trainers and the dietitians who are going to take those times and then use that to inform their coaching regimes mm-hmm. and the training schedules and the exercises they set out. That's where you make athletes. You don't make athletes by measuring how fast they are or measuring how much weight they can lift or whatever it is they're trying mm-hmm. to do. Which is what reliability statistics tends to devolve into.
Right.
It's just admiring the reliability, abysmal or otherwise, and then that's it. We've ticked the reliability engineering box, but it's not. It's just simply measuring and not improving reliability. It can be used to then go and inform a decision, which then improves reliability. But just statistics by itself can't even be confused as reliability engineering.
Yeah,
but that's not the perception these days, unfortunately.
Yeah, no. So hopefully this raises a few eyebrows out there. If you're listening to this, going, yeah, we do a lot of statistics, yet nobody else understands it, so we keep it to ourselves. Well, that's not a good position to be in. Let us know. Let us know what kind of hurdles you're facing or what kind of thoughts you have as to what's the role of statistics with reliability engineering and vice versa. Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. There's a contact form there. Chris and I and the other hosts of the show can be found on our About pages on Ascendo or through LinkedIn. And as I've been saying for 600-plus episodes, we do enjoy hearing from you. And many of our shows are inspired by questions and comments we get through these different venues. So please join the conversation, and we'll talk to you again soon. So with that, Chris, I think we'll wrap this one up.
Fantastic. Looking forward to talking again soon.
All right. Talk to you later. Cheers. Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.